What's up? This is Movies on Up. When our flag falls, our nation will rise. A man who never fails to rise to the occasion is seated across from me. That is Mr. Dave Becella.
Always risen.
That is Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. When our flag falls, our nation will rise is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, send your guess to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guess to us @moviesonup on the Twitter. If you are correct and if we choose you, our National Postal Service will not fail to send a prize package over your way. This week, Gerard Butler is back as Agent Banning, this time trying to save the president, I believe, from...
himself?
Perhaps, yeah, I think he's
framed
for a crime he didn't commit, which is kind of batshit crazy to me. This is a guy...
saved the president twice.
Twice. So if he really wanted the president dead, all he had to do was call in sick either of those other 2 days.
Just not try as hard.
Right. But no, this is the guy. Now he's changed his mind. I don't know. Maybe there's a different president. Maybe he's a big fan of President Eckert. Maybe Morgan Freeman is now the president. I have not seen London Has Fallen. I did see Olympus. This week, we get a third one. I believe it's called Angel Has Fallen or whatever it is. Now, typically... on an episode like this, we'll maybe watch a movie from that series. And not so much, because we didn't really want to go back and watch either of the Gerard Butler movies. So we thought, this sounds familiar. President's plane gets hijacked. He needs a rescue. Where have we seen this before? And we have seen it in Wolfgang Petersen's Air Force One from 1997, starring Harrison Ford, Gary Oldman, Glenn Close, and William H. Macy.
That 1997 is not a typo.
No, it's not. This is going to come up a couple times in the episode, but I was convinced that this movie, before I started watching it, was made in 1992. And when I started watching it, I thought, this movie is made in 1992. But...
and I was, up until we started recording, I had mentioned 1992's Air Force's, or whatever, the movie we just watched.
Yes.
Air Force One. And Ryan informed me, it is not 1992.
No, in fact, it opened on July 25th, 1997, to $37 million, which was plenty good enough for first place that week. George of the Jungle, Men in Black, Contact, and Good Burger round out the top five for that week.
I love Good Burger.
If that doesn't just take you back. Air Force One went on to gross $172 million domestically, which is good for 283rd place on the all-time domestic list. One spot below this 2004 Nick Cage treasure.
Drive Angry?
National Treasure.
Oh, National Treasure 2? No, Book of Secrets?
That's the first one. And one spot above this 1988 Dustin Hoffman movie, in which his character could probably tell you to the penny how much money...
Rain
it
Man.
Grossed. It is Rain Man, of course. This year's John Wick : Chapter 3-Parabellum is down in 293rd place all time with just about $170 million. 2017's Get Out, 9 places above Air Force One with $176 million. And interestingly enough, just $1 million more than the final gross for this year's Us. So Jordan Peele is good for about $175 million, give or take. Air Force One also hauled in $142 million overseas. I was trying to see just how much of that came from Russia, as we are now allies in this movie, which should also tell you that it doesn't take place as early in the 90s as we think. Box Office Mojo didn't have that broken down. But it did make worldwide total of $315 million on an $85 million budget. Today, we would have 3 of these movies, just like the Gerard Butler franchise.
We'd have Air Force 2 on a helicopter, and then Air Force C on a boat.
On a boat. And there probably is one. The president's kind of like Batman. Like, he's got every mode of transportation. Making 3 times your budget is a pretty good way to keep these things getting made. But it just shows how different the system was in 1997. This movie was made. It was done. I don't ever recall in the intervening 30 years hearing about an Air Force Two.
No, and it wasn't as franchise heavy at that point. Not everything was released with the intent of being a franchise like it is now.
This movie came up I don't feel like it was that long ago. Maybe in February we did our favorite movie presidents. It was a February for President's Day, and I had President Marshall on my list as one of my favorite movie presidents. And even then, like, I had not gone back to watch it. I did for this episode. I really actually do like this movie. I kind of couldn't remember whether I liked it or not, or just remembered, like, get off my plane. Just stupid stuff.
James
like
Vanderbeek.
That.
Yeah. I don't want you on my plane.
But I really do enjoy Air Force One with a couple minor issues. The first of which we're just going to get out of the way right at the front, because we could probably spend an hour talking about just how miserable the CGI was in this movie in 1997.
And I get it. For 1992, the CGI technology wasn't where it should be. But I still expect more than this. We did an episode on Bait a few weeks back, and we crapped on the shark at the beginning and the bad CGI. It was better than the CGI moments in this movie. And I get that it's a long time between when Bait came out in 1992, but...
Yeah. All the exterior shots of Air Force One are so bad, they take you out of the movie. There's this shot that's very clearly a green screen when the new Postmaster General, after sending the fax, is, like, just smiling. Her hair's not moving at all. She's got a parachute. What is happening? That completely takes you out of it. Spoiler alert, when the plane finally does crash. Oh, God. And it just impacts the water and sticks straight up. Oh, it's some bad CGI. Some real, real bad CGI. Did not age very well. I was thinking about, it's hard to watch a version of Star Wars that hasn't been fucked with. But I'm thinking about the Death Star blowing up in 1977. And how I'm pretty sure that even before George Lucas went back and cleaned everything up, it still looks much better than anything in Air Force One.
Yeah, well, because that was practical. Didn't they actually? Yes. It was a model they blew up, right?
Yeah, and that looked fine.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just
crash
build a model of Air Force One? Strap a firecracker to it? I don't know. However they did it, not good. But apart from that, for the most part, I think it is a pretty well-paced, certainly well-acted thriller. Harrison Ford... You think this is right at the peak of those Jack Ryan movies, which had happened in the early 90s. But really, he had been Indiana Jones for 15 years. He had been Han Solo for 20 years. By the time this movie came out, he wasn't ascending. He was kind of on the other side, the other peak, the far peak.
It's right before he went to one movie a year.
Right.
But it was when he
was stopped being action movies.
Yeah.
You know, he had that stride in the early 90s, which is where we place this movie. It had Last Crusade was 89, Patriot Games, The Fugitive back-to-back in 92, 93. Those movies are really good. You throw in Clear and Present Danger. That's why this seems like it belongs so much closer to that than, like, you know, What Lies Beneath, which I think was just the next year.
I think it was 99 or 2000. But yeah, this and Hollywood Homicide was
maybe
a couple of years after.
Josh Hartnett. So he was certainly, by the time this came out, very well-established, bankable action star. And you can see the Harrison Ford mannerisms, the grin that I think is so associated with Han Solo, like that gruff Indiana Jones. Kind of what made him a star is, I think, what made the Die Hard movies so great in the era of Stallone and Schwarzenegger. Those guys looked like action figures. Those were action stars, and people like Harrison Ford, that looked like a guy that was swinging a hammer before George Lucas found him. That's your everyman, and I think he was fantastic in that. You can see him as a police detective. You can see him as a doctor. You can see him as a lawyer, and you can see him as the president.
Yeah, but I also think this is where Die Hard was, like, right at the cusp of, or it was in the middle of all those movies, like Commando and all that. We've talked about many times how we don't get those movies anymore. Like, we don't have the Stallones or the Schwarzeneggers or those type of action stars.
I mean, we have Jason Statham and The Rock. They're about as close
as... Yeah, but even their movies are a little... They're not doing stuff like Commando.
The Rock specifically, yeah.
But, like, I feel like this was at the end of that phase. We talk about it feeling like 1992, but it feels like a movie that would come out now. Liam Neeson is an angry president of the United States. And these are the type of action movies we get more of now. And I feel like this was right in that transition phase to where your Stallones and your Van Dammes and your Schwarzeneggers were kind of starting
your
to phase
Speakmans.
Out. Yeah, yeah, your Speakmans, your Dudikoffs were starting to phase out. This kind of action movie is what we started getting.
Yeah, I think Die Hard started it. This was another great example of it. I think his career in general, Harrison Ford's career, is just kind of a continuation of what started with Die Hard. And Liam Neeson's a great example. He didn't really come to action until later in his career, whereas I think outside of American Graffiti, the first place people saw Harrison Ford, it's in a galaxy far, far away. I think that's the reason why so many people identify with that character of Han Solo. Nobody thinks of themselves as a Jedi or a princess. You think of yourself as just the dude who's caught up in the rest of this craziness. And that's what Harrison Ford always felt like. That's what John McClane felt like. He's just a dude trying to visit his wife, and then all hell breaks loose around him. That's very much, we can root for that because we see, I'm not going to be the president, but I see parts of myself in that president. Mostly the good parts, I think. Not knowing whether he was a Democrat or Republican. I don't even know if he's, did they say whether he was from Indiana or not?
I don't remember.
Because he's very intently watching what appears to be a Michigan-Notre Dame game.
Yeah, but
I have no idea who he's rooting for.
Notre Dame has a full, they're nationwide.
Yeah, they're Catholic. I don't know what his religious affiliation was, but you don't really know anything about this guy other than he seems
he's
like a
president.
He's a president, and he has that speech right at the beginning of the movie. Before he lets his fist do the talking, he lets his lips do the talking, where he's talking about not negotiating with terrorists. It's time for them to be afraid. Chastising America for not getting off its ass until we ourselves were threatened. And then he kind of becomes the physical embodiment of that speech for the rest of the movie. His advisors tell him he's going to have to back that up. He just made that in policy. And he does. He backs it up with his fists.
And it's an election year. They do establish that. I do like that they made a movie about the president and left the politics out of it. Like, that was fine.
Specifically the party affiliation.
Yeah.
You could probably do in 1992 or 97, but
yeah,
you can't do now.
It wasn't as split. And I was thinking the whole time I'm watching this is like, what was their barometer? Like, obviously I was thinking 92, so I was thinking they had end of Reagan or George one. It came out shortly after Clinton was elected. Or no, it had been middle term. Okay, mm-hmm. So right after he was reelected. So, I mean, Clinton was president during filming and release of this, and it's like, yeah, I couldn't see Clinton doing that. So, but I do like that. I do like Glenn Close as the vice president.
Yeah,
she was really good, and I like that it wasn't a thing. It was just, here's the vice president. Since it's Glenn Close, you accept it. Like, okay,
right? They
yes,
didn't
sir.
Make a big deal of oh, this is a woman vice president
in 97,
right?
Like, where that would have been a even bigger deal than now. You know, we'd never had it. We still haven't, mm-hmm. 20 years later. But it was just, she was there. She was respected. She was not talked down to. Like, yeah. She commanded the room. And I think having somebody like Glenn Close, I would elect her vice president.
Absolutely. I would not vote for Gary Oldman unless I was trying to vote for the evilest person in the world. Not that Gary Oldman's an evil guy.
He'd still lose if he ran in 2020, even by those parameters.
That's very true.
About Gary Oldman, though, I want somebody to pay to do one of those Ancestry.com things. I want to know where he comes from, because you name a country, and if you think like, oh, bad German, Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Bad Russian,
Gary
Oldman.
Bad English guy.
Yes, Gary Oldman.
Vampire.
Whatever was in True Romance, Gary Oldman. Like, he does everything.
Alien.
Yeah, Gary Oldman.
Yep.
He's done everything. He's not typecast to one nationality.
Evil American.
Yep.
Lee Harvey Oswald. He's yep. done it. And he was doing it all at that time. That's a guy. I mean, you want to talk about like transformations in his roles. Holy shit. And he was bringing such gravity. Like, we talk about, if you see Alan Rickman on the screen, he's probably a bad guy. I don't know that anybody's had a greater run as a villain than Gary Oldman, where it's like, if you see him on the screen, he's bad news, but he's, like, really bad.
I'll never forget. I think it was Dennis Miller Live. Like, as much as a joke Dennis Miller is now, but Gary Oldman came out around this time and said something, and the response was, "Holy shit, I never knew you were British." And it was a genuine, wasn't a joke, it was a genuine reaction. And I'll never forget that, because that is, I mean, he transforms himself, the professional, true romance, like Seventh Sense or whatever that.
The Fifth Element?
Fifth Element, yeah. He's ridiculous.
Yes, we've already mentioned Alan Rickman, and it's hard to not have a lot of Die Hard comparisons here. This is essentially Die Hard on
Air Force One.
Yeah, exactly. And you have a terrorist, or at least that's what everybody thought Hans Gruber was, but he was kind of a thief.
A thief.
Right. This guy very much is a terrorist, but I think the parallels between those two characters, Hans Gruber was a guy that was always about nine steps ahead, and that's what made him such an incredible villain, is that he really had everything in control up until about the very end. And Oldman's character was the same way. There are so many times in this movie where you think they've got it solved. They get Air Force One on the ground at Rammstein. Oh, it's going to be the end of the movie. They're just going to rush onto the plane and kill everybody. Nope, he's got that covered. They take back off. When the president evacuates all of the gas from the plane, oh, now we're going to force him to land. And he has that speech with Glenn Close where he's like, nah, this is physics. You can either fill this plane with gas or you're going to lose all the hostages. We're going to crash. So just go ahead and fill them. And they do. He had just about every contingency planned for. And I think that's what makes such a great villain. His portrayal was well, but it was actually a well-written character too.
Yeah, you knew his motivations, like you knew what he wanted. A lot of times terrorists in movies are just kind of the boogeyman. They're just evil for evil's sake. That's not what a terrorist is.
They're black mask wearing.
Yeah, terrorists believe what they're doing. They don't see themselves necessarily as this form of evil. They're doing what they think is right, and that's what he's doing. And you have that belief in there, and it was very well thought out, just like Gruber, and wasn't just, here's a bad guy to get shot eventually.
Dean Stockwell played the Secretary of Defense or whatever, and he mentions, at least on a couple occasions, how this guy's a zealot. He's a fanatic. This is his mission in life, and he's going to go down with the ship, essentially. It's easy to think that they're just bad, crazy people, and in a sense, maybe they are. But I think what this movie did is there's that scene that he has with the president's daughter where he's talking about, like, you see people and you think, oh, how can they do this? These victims are somebody's mother, somebody's father, somebody's son. And he says to her, like, I am someone's son. I have small children of my own. I'm doing what I think is right for them. Obviously, that seems a very extreme position. But what they did was they tried to explain his ideology and his rationale.
And that's what a lot of villains don't get, is they're just evil. They're just bad guys, where he's truly believes he's doing what is right. And that's what makes terrorism so terrifying, is that
they think they're right.
Those planes flying into the Twin Towers were the right thing to do to get their message across. And they truly believe that, to the point that they know they're not coming back from that. So you don't gas up the plane and it goes down. He came into this knowing that he might not get out of it. He's accepted that. So it's just you losing the president and all the hostages. So there's that belief that's so hard to work with. And when it's well thought out and well planned, it's terrifying.
And you have such a great, a fully realized villain and such a well-played villain that you think when he gets ejected from the plane that's pretty much the end of the movie. And that's kind of I don't think I'm nitpicking here. The CGI is terrible. And this movie's 2 hours long, and it really didn't need to be.
It could have been shorter. You mentioned the pacing. I feel like it started off, the pacing was rough at first.
I think they do a good job of setting up the sting operation or the undercover op where they get the general.
Yeah.
So that really sets the stage for everything.
But then when stuff starts happening, it just starts happening. Yes. And then it doesn't stop. So from there until he's off the plane, it is a well-paced action movie, because it's not hit you over the head to where there's too much going on. There's enough. It's well-paced from maybe, 25 minutes in. Like, once they start shooting everybody, until Oldman's off the plane, I think it's really, really well paced.
I would go so far as to say the beginning until Oldman's off the plane, I think is done well. But you have, like we've mentioned, Die Hard on a plane after that had already been done. Imagine if Hans Gruber were to have been dispatched in the second role of Die Hard, and then the last 20 minutes is just John McClane riding on an elevator with the computer hacker guy that we somehow he didn't realize was a terrorist, just waiting for him to turn into a bad guy again. It seemed like they wanted to just manufacture more tension, that like, or we can't just end the movie with Oldman's ejection. Like, that's not enough. We have to ratchet it up to 11. Bring in the MiGs. And
you remember Army of Darkness?
I do.
How that movie is like 87 minutes long, mm-hmm. and that's with an extra 10 minutes at the end in S-Mart that doesn't make any sense. That Sam Raimi admitted the movie was too short, so they had to add that on. That's what the last 30 minutes of this movie feels like.
Although I'll take 10 minutes of Shop Smart, Shop S-Mart
yeah.
over...
It felt like they got Oldman off the plane, and it's like, oh, we're only at 90 minutes. This is a Harrison Ford, Wolfgang Peterson epic. It's got to be at least 2 hours.
But even Wolfgang Peterson at that point, that was relatively early in his career. He's much more known for directing stuff overseas. But yeah, it did seem like there was drama manufactured, just man versus gravity tension that just didn't need to be there. I think the movie would have been much stronger had it wrapped up when the bad guy is dealt with. That's the end. I mean, ostensibly could have been the end of the conflict. The plane was still in good enough position. It could have landed at that point. The only small issue that we would have had landing the plane right then would be that troublesome Agent Gibbs, mole agent,
which I had forgotten about at this point.
It's easy to forget about him, despite the looks that he always gives to the camera to let you know I'm evil.
And that's my
don't trust me with this gun.
That's my complaint, is like we keep mentioning Hans Gruber.
Yes.
You remember his henchmen. You know, you have the hacker, you have the brothers. Like his henchmen had character. Oldman's didn't really. Like
the guy who was flying the plane, the pilot had a little bit of a personality,
but other than that, they were just faceless villains.
Yes.
And if you're gonna have a mole in the Secret Service and have this like big plot thing, he should have some kind of character to him. He didn't do anything.
He did not.
He was so forgettable that I forgot he was a bad guy.
And then after you dispatch all of the terrorists and nobody knows that this guy did anything wrong, for him to still show his cards seems ludicrous. What is his motivation at that point?
What's his goal at that point? It's almost a better ending if they just kind of forget that subplot that he was an agent. And then just have him on the new Air Force One, just kind of like looking around, and just have this guy who did all this.
That's how you do a sequel.
Get away with it. That would have been so much more compelling to me, I think.
Or he gets shot accidentally in the crossfire. So he's dead.
I like him surviving. Like, I think him getting out of this and even like being buddy buddy with the president afterwards, like, oh, I need a new crew now or something like
oh, yeah, you're in line for a promotion, buddy.
Yeah, like something like that, I think is terrifying because it is open ended, especially if there's not a sequel. Like, it's one of those like endings to where it's like, is it working? Like, did the good guys win?
Yeah. Is the monster still alive? And is it on my closest guard duty? Any one of those things, I think, would have made the movie an easier watch. We didn't need those stunt pieces at the end. It just kind of made the movie drag. And I think it would have set up nicely for a sequel, which obviously we never got. But this week, we're getting the third in the Has Fallen series. Neither of the first two have managed to gross over $100 million domestically. And only London has gone over $200 million worldwide. Now, the Air Force One made $385 million. Worldwide in 1997, 170, 180 million domestically. It's much more successful than the modern franchise. So, I mean, if you like the Gerard Butler movies, and people out there do because they're watching them, give this one a try. I think it is a better made version of those.
I liked White House Down. That came out at the same time, or within a few months of Olympus as well.
That was the
Jamie Foxx as the president, yeah. Channing Tatum. touring the White House.
Like, I liked that as well.
I liked that a lot. And in a different universe, I feel like we're getting White House Down 3 this weekend and not Angel Has Fallen 3. Or
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, they would have gone with the action comedy instead of the Gerard Butler shoot a bunch of guys in the head. We get enough of those movies. But let's say, I mean, you talk about like in another multiverse, maybe Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx are on their third movie. Maybe in yet another multiverse, Agent Gibbs survived and he's back to threaten the president 20 years later. Agent Gibbs is the same guy. He served under multiple presidents, but now in Air Force Two, if you had to remake this movie today.
Because it does feel like a movie that would come out today.
Yeah.
Like it feels like a Liam Neeson movie, but to go for like an American, like who would be a good movie president that wouldn't surprise you to see kick ass?
I mean, Dwayne Johnson is kind of the,
but he's
absolutely,
like, but he's an action star. So like,
he's an action star. So it would not surprise me.
But if you go for somebody who's that like every man that you can buy them being in the military previously, that would come off like a president. I could see like Clooney.
I'm not even sure what coming across as a president
now
means
that's
anymore.
All been. But I think somebody like Clooney, would be fine in this. Like
I could see that he's certainly got a bit of Harrison Ford to him, and we've seen him in things like The American. Like he can.
You don't immediately associate him with action, but he can do it.
Stately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd certainly watch Clooney in that.
Hugh Laurie, maybe. I mean, he's British, but like. Somebody like their
or
Kelsey Grammer, like somebody like that would be interesting.
Well, Kelsey Grammer would be fascinating because I don't see him kicking ass.
That could be fun. Lithgow.
Jeez.
President Lithgow.
So if you feel like watching a movie this weekend where the president is under some duress on an airplane, you could go out and spend some money. God knows the summer receipts could use it. You could go out and do that, or you could stay at home. I believe Air Force One, if you've got Showtime, you can watch it for free, or you can rent it from Prime for like $3-4, whatever it is. I think it's an entertaining watch. Don't expect much in the way of CGI, but if you're maybe too young to remember Harrison Ford in full action mode, this is it. Go back and watch the Jack Ryan stuff too, because it's pretty good. Clear and Present Danger is dope. Patriot Games, dope. There's a reason that Harrison Ford is an action guy.
And if you're just in a Harrison Ford mood, Witness.
That
movie, I watch that all the time. It holds up. That
was
movie
that
is
from like the early 80s, like
84-ish, 5-ish. Yeah. That movie is so good.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously good.
Fugitive, I mean, he's got a hell of a filmography outside of the big franchise stuff, outside of Star Wars, Indiana Jones. I think people know and see those, but the guy was a big-time movie star. Enormously famous dude. This was kind of at, I guess his powers were a little bit waning at that point. But
Costner.
Costner's the president? Yeah. Michael Keaton.
Oh, yeah. No, Keaton. I like Keaton.
That'd be great. But yeah, Costner. I could see him making this movie in 1997.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or 92. Either way.
Yeah, either way. He was around. Let us know who you think would be a good replacement for our
president.
That's shit. Halloween's coming out with sequels that have come out.
Legacy sequels.
Yeah,
that's
40
a big
years
thing
later.
Now,
Yeah. So why can't we do one for Air Force One? Let us know who should be the president. Doesn't have to be an American actor. That'd be fascinating.
In that case, Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Not just in the movie, but in life.
Well, I think we gotta redo a document for that, but he could certainly try and cancel a presidential apocalypse. Next week, speaking of apocalypse, it is the end of the summer. So we will be doing our favorite back to school movies.
Slash end of summer.
At least my list is much, much more back to school.
I have one back end of summer.
Fair enough.
But
and
I
to find out
it by then.
What that end of summer movie is, come back next week. But until then,
keep it up.